Well, hi there, Jonathan Dahl with you once again. I'm excited about what we're about to do here. It's a summary of a live presentation that I gave just a few days ago to about 150 really dynamic, fantastic young leaders. Now, I did take a live recording at the event. I wasn't happy with it. I'm a bit of a perfectionist. My normal microphone wasn't working, so I did a different sort of recording. I wasn't happy, but what I wanted to do was to make sure you didn't miss out, was to create just a summary now of the key content that I worked through, because especially the second part of this presentation where I work through eight key strategies, which I call bridging the gap, I think are going to be really, really powerful for you. So I have a new book coming out really soon called Bridging the Gap, where I look at, you know, why is it that some people function really highly and many don't? It's a core question, one that's fascinated me for ages. So I just want to take you through a few things here. For those of you listening to this that were in the audience, you'll remember a lot of the key points here, and I hope this really reinforces your learning. And if you're hearing this for the first time, grab a pen and paper, because there's some really good stuff here. So basically, I was there on the day to talk about leadership, and what a huge topic. And the first point that I wanted to share was that when we talk about leadership, there's essentially no consensus about what leadership actually is. Now, I did my first master's degree in leadership, and that's what really struck me, was that all these people all around the world, you think that there would be some kind of, you know, common core definition of what leadership actually was. But what you consistently find is this great diversity of opinions about how to define leadership. You know, do you define it by, you sort of know it when you see it, or are there distinct kind of academic categories that make it really clear? Because think about how influential leadership really is in our culture. I mean, it's such a central thing to our political discourse, our business discourse. Leadership kind of touches on all of our lives all day, but yet it's amazing that academically, at least, there's no consensus. So I sort of shared the idea that, you know, if you put a picture of a cat up on a, you know, on a screen and you ask somebody what it is, well, you're not going to have a huge diversity of definitions. I mean, you could call it by its Latin name, Felix Domesticus, but apart from that and the word cat, that's pretty much what it is. But when it comes to leadership, there's so many different definitions. And I shared that, you know, there's the idea that leadership is a sort of a vision of a future preferred state that's different to the current state. And what the leader does is they kind of see a vision of the future and they bring that vision into the present by the sort of way that they actually lead. And that's one theory. And I remember when I was studying, there was so many more than that. There were these vast theories about what leadership actually was. You know, John Maxwell, the American leadership expert, you know, he famously said that leadership is influence. Now, how do you know leadership is happening? Well, influence is happening. You can see leadership in the influence that it has on people that are actually under or working under the particular leader or living under that particular leader. He also had the great quote where he said, you know, if you think you're leading and no one is following, then all you're doing is taking a walk. But, you know, more recently, watching some of the political discourse in this country, and I know you could be listening to this anywhere in the world, but you could pretty much, I'm pretty sure, apply it to whatever the political discourse is in your country. But, you know, there was a big problem with character. You know, some of the stuff that was happening and decisions we've been making and stories coming up from the past, I sat back and watched it and I thought, what we've got here is a crisis of character, which tied into my understanding of what leadership actually is, which is to share with you that leadership is character. You know, leadership, it's a broad definition, and I want to really flesh that out for you. Leadership is character. You know, you can determine the kind of impact of a particular leader by the content of their character, because the character, the type of character that a leader has, determines their influence. So, you know, Mother Teresa, because of her character, had a particular kind of influence on her followers and on the world in general. And of course, you take an Adolf Hitler, and his character influences his followers and of course influences the world. So character is really central to leadership. So I think what we need to do culturally and very much in your life and mine at the personal level is to start to talk a lot more about character. And there are people doing this. The whole area of virtues education, character formation, character education is getting, you know, a lot more attention than it has for quite a few years. So if I'm going to say to you now that character or leadership is character, Well, we need to define character. A lot of ways we can do it, but I think probably the simplest way is to simply argue that your character is simply the sum total of your choices and decisions. Your choices and decisions so far in life basically equal your character. So, you know, 2,500 years ago, the Greek philosopher Aristotle was asked, well, how does the courageous person become courageous? Because the Greeks were really interested in that sort of virtue and character stuff. And Aristotle just said, well, it's simple. You know, they do courageous things. So even 2,500 years ago, they made a link between how actions and choices, our decisions, shape our character. So the powerful point that I shared just a couple of days ago, and I really want you to take away with you, is the realization that we are about to become our choices. Our choices are incredibly powerful and they shape who we become. We make so many all the time, what we eat, who we associate with, how we spend our time, what we watch, what we listen to. We think it's neutral. We think it's just our preference. But we need to understand that the choices and decisions that we're making, that I'm making every day, are shaping our character. So the broad area of leadership, and there's such an interest in it, and you know, business-wise now, as I work with more and more sort of business leaders, everybody wants the secret sauce. Everybody wants, you know, the latest Harvard Business School theory on leadership. And don't get me wrong, there's a lot of good stuff in the theory. But I think before we talk about leadership, what I want to talk to you about is self-leadership. The ability to lead yourself and to form your character before we talk about leading anybody else. So you could be listening to this, you could be thinking, well, I'm not a leader, you know, I'm just in my home and I've got my family. No, you probably got a leadership role in your house. If you've got kids, you've definitely got a leadership role. You know, I'm sure in your work, you've got some kind of leadership role at some level. It could be very high or maybe not as high, but we're all leading at different levels pretty much all the time. So let's talk about character and self-leadership, because very simply, what happens to most people is simply something called homeostasis. Now, I've talked about this in podcasts before, but homeostasis is something that takes place inside your central nervous system, and it's just the process by which your body regulates heart rate, blood pressure, neurochemicals, hormone levels. Your body is always working to keep you at a static, consistent baseline. You know, sure, if a snake jumps in front of you, your central nervous system jumps in and goes, wow, snake, you know, norepinephrine, adrenaline, goes crazy and you run around the place. But you know, once the snake disappears and it's 10-15 minutes later, well, you're not still at that aroused rate. You're not still at that massive, you know, super aroused state in your central nervous system. Why? Because your central nervous system, once threats have passed, will keep moving you back to homeostasis, to this baseline. Now, what I said to the audience the other day was that homeostasis is awesome in our central nervous system, but it can become really problematic in other areas of life. So yes, we want our bodies to be in homeostasis, but we don't want our personal development, our growth, our relationships, our finances, our careers to keep returning to a baseline. That's obvious. We want to grow all the time. Which leads me into the second part of this short podcast, which is, have you ever wondered, because you know, I've only really started to think about this more recently, why do some people operate at this extraordinary level, but vast numbers of us stay back in homeostasis? You know, what is it that keeps so many of us in our comfort zones, often for our entire lives? And I share the quote, you know, that this, you know, the great famous quote that the ship or a ship is safe in a harbor, but that's not what the ship is for. Okay, a ship is safe in a harbor, but that's not what the ship is for. The ship is for traveling. The ship is for getting out there on the ocean. And that's like us. We should be out there on the ocean of life, engaged, doing things, growing, learning, failing, you know, getting feedback, changing all the time. But many of us, you know, so many people just stay in the same old, same old. And you probably do too, and I have at times. But if you listen to this, and if you listen to me regularly, you're definitely the kind of person that's like, well, look, yeah, homeostasis, eh, I want to grow. So the question that I'm really trying to address is this question of, How do we bridge that gap? And that's the focus of my work, probably over the next 12 to 24 months, is this bridging the gap mentality that I'm sort of working on, is how do we go from one place to a place of real growth? Now, I've worked out about 8 key steps, and I'm really clear that there could be 150 steps, there could be 4, but at the moment I've got 8, and I'm going to put these in the book really soon, but I wanted to share them with you just like I did with this fantastic audience. And if you're listening to this from the audience, hello, it was a lot of fun to be there, and I hope you had a great time. So I'm going to spin through these quickly, because I'm going to really flesh them out in much more detail in the book. But just if you're taking notes, you're listening to this, hopefully you're not taking notes while driving or flying an aircraft or performing open heart surgery. But if you get a chance, just put these down. Step number one in bridging the gap is simply to decide. It sounds so crazy. Everybody wants, like I said, the secret sauce. But most of us never get to the point of, well, I don't want to live this way anymore. That point of deciding, of going, I've listened to Jonathan, the weekly podcast, for months. I've read other books. For years I've messed around with this stuff. But there comes a moment, and often many subsequent moments, where we actually have to go, this is what I want. I decide today to change and just go for it. And I shared with the audience that the word decide comes from the Latin decisio, which means to cut off from. To cut off from. And there was a beautiful question, and if you're listening to this and you were the person that asked it, thank you, because that question really was an awesome one. A young lady in the audience asked me, she said, well, when was that moment of decision for you? And I was stumped. I went, wow, there'd been a lot of moments in my life where I'd sort of really tried to accomplish stuff. But I ended up saying, look, was there a key moment? I probably think there was, and I'd need to go back to my journals and think about it some more. But what I did say was that I find now that these decision moments for me have gone on and on and on. I make them daily, that I constantly make these decisions to keep trying to grow. And friends, I get it wrong all the time, and I go backwards and I make the same mistakes. But I think that for me now, the trend, to steal that Twitter term, I am trending in the direction of bridging the gap. And I hope you can come with me. I said that I've got this perennial restlessness, that I'm just not a chill merchant. And it would be embarrassing to try and pretend that I was. And anybody that knows me personally that listens to this knows that me and, Jack Johnson, Bob Marley are not sort of soulmates. I love their music, but I'm just not the kind of, sit in the hammock kind of guy. I'm getting a little bit better as my kids, get older. But, really, I just want to grow. And that moment of decision is a crucial one. So step one in bridging the gap, decide that you want to do it, that you want to actually grow and change. It sounds like it's a simple idea, but it's a very powerful one. Step two, consider your reference groups. Now, I've done a whole other podcast in this. You can go back through the podcast archive and you will find it. This is Sociology 101. This is coming out of the US a few decades ago now. Reference group studies simply say that you have a reference group, a group of peer group, a group of friends, or the 5 key people that influence your life. You are only going to rise as high in life as they have. And it's a very confronting thing to think about, that you rise as high in life as the 5 people you spend the most time with. So this is just a big challenge, that if you want to bridge the gap to excellence, then you need to look at who are you spending your time with. The great quote from Texas, if you lie down with dogs, you get up with fleas. Now, I'm not judging your friends, and I'm not saying we think we're wonderful and we look down on people. That's not my point. In fact, I shared with people a quote from the Bible, which was Romans chapter 12, verse 3, which is a great line. No matter what your faith tradition, the words are, do not consider yourself more highly than you ought, but think of yourself with sober judgment. So this isn't about going, well, I'm going to find all these amazing people. I'm not going to talk to, I'm going to be really, sort of snobby. No, this is like, you can still have great relationships with a whole spectrum of people, but who are the 5 key influences in your life? Now, the really good point here on your reference groups is that the internet has democratized access to amazing people. So now via podcast, and I'm a huge fan of podcasts. Hey, I'm doing a podcast right now, but I listen to the best stuff in the world on podcasts. You know, I really recommend to you Jonathan Fields' Good Life Project. He does some great stuff. He's always interviewing interesting people, and you can find so many people on podcasts. Guys like James Schramko interview interesting people. Now, there's so many. You could access anybody. You know, you can't, you know, well, he's passed away now, but previously it would be very hard to go and meet Steve Jobs and hang out with him. But now there's just tons of YouTube video, there's great biographies, the one recently by Isaacson, which I read, which was amazing. So your reference groups can become virtual as well. You know, I get influences from some amazing people, you know, some amazing speakers and thinkers. I watch TED videos, I'm always getting input. So in general, though, who are the five people you spend the most time with? Have a think about that. And you've got to be tough. Sometimes you've got to just realize that you're growing in a different way and you're still going to have a friendship, but you've got to really maybe cut ties, spend less time with somebody and start to spend more time with some other people. Step three. So what have we done so far? One, decide that you're going to cut off. Two, consider your reference groups. Three, I want to talk about obstacles, which has been another big revelation for me. So step three is obstacles to bridge the gap. I argue that we inhabit a therapeutic culture of ease, a therapeutic culture of ease. Whenever we have difficult emotions, many of us are going to eat too much, drink too much, hang out with the wrong person, get in the wrong relationship. We're really good at killing off difficult emotions. And what we have to do is start to realize that the obstacles in our lives, rather than being sources of mental anguish and pain, they are a gift. They're our teachers. You know, Homer Simpson once said to Lisa in an episode, he goes, "Lisa, how many times have I told you? If something's really hard, that means it's not worth doing." You know, it's a great line. It's funny, but a lot of people live that way. You know, but from now on, think right now. Where's an obstacle in your life right now? I'm going to go to silence just for a few seconds. Here it comes. Silence, and cue the silence now. Okay, there are obstacles in your life. There are big obstacles in mine. But I've learned that they are your friend. They are your teacher. So don't give up. Don't just go, "Oh, well, I'm just not meant to do it and this isn't meant to happen." Friends, people didn't think that you could, that we, you know, the human person would ever fly. Okay, a whole bunch of people said, "We're never going to fly." I mean, do you think the Wright brothers lay awake at night going, "Well, that's a pretty big obstacle. You know, everybody in the world thinks it's never going to happen." Or the 4-minute mile. You know, there's no one's ever going to break the 4-minute mile until, you know, Bannister did it. And then, you know, about a billion other people have done it since, give or take a few. So obstacles are your friend. To bridge the gap, you've got to become the kind of person that goes, "Every time I get an obstacle, I grow. Every time I get an obstacle, I grow." All the time. I mentioned before, James Schramko does some great stuff podcasting-wise. But he had a great quote. I listened to him being interviewed, and he talked about, his metaphor for many ways for life was be like water, was to kind of, you know, whenever he faced a problem, he thought of the metaphor of water going around things. You know, water goes under, around, through, it can go over. Think of the Grand Canyon. Water gets it done eventually. So obstacles are your friend. Step four. So we've done number one, decide. Number two, consider your reference groups. Number three, welcome obstacles and start to reframe around them. Step four, I love this one, threshold experiences. Okay, threshold experiences came to me watching a documentary called Buds 234. If you go onto YouTube and type in Buds, B-U-D-S 234, it's a 6-part series on the induction training for the US Navy SEALs. Buds stands for Basic Underwater Demolition SEALs Training. And I got really fascinated watching these guys. I was like, now, these guys are like mega performers, right? They're like, they come in fit, they come in high achievers, but I was amazed to see how far they could still stretch and what made them go from where they thought they were to where they could eventually be was the environment that they were in. They placed themselves in particular environments that forced them to perform. Now, concentrate on this one. I'm really big on this. You have to get yourself regularly in situations and around people where you are pushed. Now, that could be spiritually, physically, emotionally, professionally, business, art, whatever it is. You've got to get into what I call threshold experiences. Now, at the moment for me, I'm doing a huge amount of cycling. I'm racing with a really good club, and I keep pushing myself up. I keep going up level after level, riding with faster and faster cyclists because I'm always getting stretched. And friends, it's the hurt locker. And this thing has to hurt. Now, I'm saying get medical advice, blah, blah, blah. Don't do anything dangerous, stupid. It will harm other people or yourself psychologically, emotionally, physically, or financially. Get the disclaimer in. So don't do anything crazy. But, you know, my brother and I, he was here just a couple of days ago, and we're riding together. And we're riding in one of the most beautiful places in the world. And we're going across, and I'm talking about this stuff. And he said, well, yeah, I guess you keep going up until you get completely dropped. And it's a cycling thing, right? Eventually, you just cannot keep up, and they drop you off the back. And it's like, great, because, you know, you're in that threshold experiences. So where for you is the place where you are being pushed and stretched? You've got to go and find them. Sometimes they'll come to you, but most of the time, you need to find them. You've got to put your hand up and say, right, I'm good at this skill. I know how to do X, but I'm going to go and find the place where people are better than me. Friends, number four is gold, threshold experiences. So number five is knowledge. So we've done number one, decide. Number two, consider your reference groups. Three, welcome obstacles. Four, threshold experiences. Number five is knowledge, which is simply the Stephen Covey stuff. You know, if you haven't ever read Covey's Seven Habits of Highly Effective People, you've got to do that. That's just basic homework. This is Stephen Covey's idea of sharpen the saw. You've got to get better at stuff. You know, if whatever skill set you have, you've got to sharpen it, but you've also got to know stuff. This new knowledge-based digital economy means that, you know, you have to become irreplaceable as fast as possible. The digital economy is changing everything, so you've got to become expert at a broad range of sort of skills, but things like entrepreneurship, creativity, team stuff. You've got to sharpen the saw all the time. So for me, you know, at the moment, you know, as my business grows and the internet stuff grows and I'm doing more speaking work and, you know, connecting with more business people and more people at peak performance, is I've got to learn new stuff. I'm fascinated with what we can do on the internet. And so I'm still learning. I'm constantly pushing myself, new platforms, new technology all the time. Right, step six, we're almost through. Ask for what you want. This is a basic one. If you really want to grow, you have to actually ask for things a lot of the time, and we're terrible at it. Many of us are really afraid to ask. Now, a couple of things on this. The first thing is I want you to be unreasonable. We're often incredibly reasonable. We don't ask for much. We don't ask at all. We don't ask what we really want. Be unreasonable. Don't be rude, but be unreasonable. Start to go, you know what? I need this. I need X. I need this person to help me. I need to reach out and make this happen. So ask for what you want. There's a great quote recently, I listened to a podcast where this really successful entrepreneur just said, you know what? Entrepreneurs ask. They ask for money. They ask for resources. They ask for mentors. They ask for customers. They ask for, you know, public relations stuff and press release. Ask all the time. Now, the reason we don't ask, this is a big one. We have to ask ourselves why we don't ask for what we need. Think about it. You might be in a relationship. Are you asking for what you need at the right times? Are you putting your hand up and saying, look, I really need this. I care about you. I love you, but this isn't happening. I need this. Or, you know, you don't ask somebody on a date. That's my favorite one, you know, because when I spoke, and if you were in the audience, you'll remember I said this, that, you know, how many of us never asked somebody for that date in our lives? You know, they've probably worked out okay, but we never asked that key question or that special person, or we never asked for that promotion. So step six, ask for what you want, but why don't we, leads us to step seven, which of course is the huge problem of fear. So fear is massive, and bridging the gap, you know, fear probably, you know, I said that fear basically is responsible for most of what sucks in the universe. And fear is massive. We don't ask why. Fear, rejection, embarrassment, failure, all that stuff. So I've done a previous podcast on failure, but I want to talk about the fear of failure is massive. You know, if you ask somebody out and they reject you, you know, we're still very social creatures and we're like, I don't want to be rejected. I don't want to change too much. Or, you know, my peer group won't like me. I'll be rejected, or I'll be laughed at. I'll be embarrassed. Or what if I fail? So what I do with failure is two things. Number one, as I say, you need to fail more. Now, that sounds so counterintuitive, but go and fail more. I mean, I've seen huge growth in my business because we did things, you know, sort of for 2 or 3 years, and they failed and they failed. I remember sitting around going, oh my gosh, this is crazy. I'm losing money. This is weak. And then finally, I just tweaked and tweaked and tweaked. And go and read Eric Ries's book, you know, Eric Ries, R-I-E-S, The Lean Startup. And talk about iteration and pivot and preserve and how failure leads to sort of changing things until you grow. If you're not failing, you're not doing anything. I mean, if you're a teacher, if you're not trying new stuff in a class and failing, then are you improving? If you teach exactly the same way every single year, well, it might work and you might do really well, but you're still not becoming the amazing teacher you could become. You know, if you just went out and failed and you did this lesson and it failed and the kids hated it and they laughed at you and it was awful. Or, you know, you went and asked somebody on a date. Please don't do this if you're married. But if you went, you know, you went and asked someone on a date and you failed, well, this leads into the next part of fear. You didn't fail. You just got feedback. You just got feedback. So now I want to wire something up in your head. Failure equals feedback. I did something. I tried this and then it failed. I'm going to learn from the feedback. So a bit like obstacles, failure is going to be your teacher. And friends, as always, I'm talking to myself here because I do this stuff and I fail and I don't always remember to get the feedback. And sometimes I go, it's the end of the world and I should have known better and everything's going to end. And, you know, sometimes I got to slap myself around the head and go, no, you got feedback. Go and change your approach and try something else. Right. We're almost through. We're into number 8, very quick summary. Number 1, decide. Number 2, consider your reference groups. Number 3, obstacles. Number 4, get into those threshold experiences where you're really pushed. I'll tell you the truth, tomorrow morning at about 5:30 a.m., I am about to go and do 6 hill repeats on this crazy mountain near where I'm staying. I'm on holiday at the moment, so I'm going to go and do some crazy cycling, and it's going to hurt. And I'm going to do it deliberately because it's a threshold experience, and I want to grow and get fitter. Now, we had threshold experiences. Number 5 was knowledge. Number 6, ask for what you want. Number 7 is dealing with fear, as now we now understand that it's feedback. And number 8 to finish is simply perseverance. So I think I've talked about this recently, I've done a video on this recently. I think perseverance is the greatest attribute. Sometimes you just have to go and go and go and keep going, keep going, keep pushing, and the results come. I just can't stress to you enough. You know, the great Churchill quote, the important thing to remember when you're going through hell is to keep going. You know, we don't sit when things are going on. We keep pushing, keep pushing, keep pushing. So to bridge the gap, you need to do all this stuff. You need to decide and fail and get obstacles and all this stuff and learn more knowledge and then put it all together. You know, it's not as if you're going to do it and then on a Tuesday at 4 p.m., suddenly your life is just going to be perfect. It's like, no, you just keep going. And I'm a big believer in this. And I used to think it was like just, you know, overly spiritual and a bit of a nothing statement. But the journey is the point. You know, we're not going to get to a point where we suddenly go, oh, bliss, I can just put my feet up and that's it, I check out a life. No, all of this is about persevering, growing, keep pushing to that distant place of realizing that amazing potential you have when you bridge the gap. Now, I want to finish and I want to do it in an important way, is all of this stuff that I've done tonight and basically all the work that I do around growing and personal development and growing in your finance and growing in your career and growing in your relationships, you know, I hope you don't hear today, this recording now, as like, well, I want you to do all this so you can become amazing, so you can get lots of stuff, okay? The point of what I'm doing here is not to say, do all this, you know, so you can get stuff. So this is what I call the crucial distinction. Now, if you do this and make $1 billion, that's awesome because that was in you to do. And to do that, I hope you'll have made amazing sort of, you know, impact in other people's lives. But whether you make $1 billion or you make $100 for the rest of your life, it's irrelevant. Here's the point. The culture around us is huge on narcissism, self-actualization, financial obsession, and the accumulation of possessions. Now, some of that stuff's good. You know, Churchill also said that, you know, sort of capitalism is the worst system in history, except for all the other ones that have been tried. You know, so capitalism isn't perfect, but it does create, you know, amazing hospitals and science and all sorts of amazing stuff. But, you know, the extreme ends of it train us to believe that the most important thing in the world is what we accumulate, what we own, what we possess. So What I want to do is just come at you and say that, you know, the great quote, the goal is not to be the richest person in the graveyard. The goal is not to bridge the gap and grow your potential so you can just get and get and get. I just want to leave you with the idea that the fundamental meaning of human life, the reason I want you to bridge the gap and become the ultimate version of you that you can become, do you get that? Do you understand that you have a physical peak potential, an emotional peak potential, a psychological, spiritual, relational peak potential? You know you do. Because you're not operating in it. You know that you could improve in every area of your life. But why? Because the meaning of life is, drumroll, contribution. The meaning of life is to grow as powerfully as you can so you can contribute to the lives of others in the most powerful, meaningful way, because you will be fully alive and fully actualized and fully able to give. And I give you a quote from the Trappist monk, Thomas Merton, which I memorized many, many years ago, which had a big impact. Was just, he said, the meaning of life is not self-actualization, which means not becoming the ultimate version of you for its own sake. He said, the meaning of life is self-transcendence. It is to fully recollect yourself. Now, recollect means to know your full capacities, to know who you are. He said, it's to fully recollect yourself so you can fully give, so you can fully contribute. So now, at my age, with young kids and marriage and business, my job is to become the best version of me I can, the fittest, the healthiest. Why? Because the fitter and healthier I am, the more energy I have to contribute to the needs of my kids and to Karen and to people that, you know, ask for help and that I work with. You know, spiritually, I want to become the best mentor I can to other people. Financially, I want to master finance so I can help other people master finance. You know, all these areas, I really mean this, and you can always hear it, I hope, in my voice tone. And if you've met me personally, I hope you know that. When people start talking to me about their dreams and their goals, what they want to do, I'm like, oh, I get pumped and I want to get alongside people and just contribute. And, you know, I think all the great spiritualities have that at their bedrock, you know, is just the ability to love and to serve and to contribute to the lives of other people. So get out there, get these 8 steps into practice and start growing and bridging the gap. Because I really want you to be able to give so much more of who you are. You know, like Wayne Bennett, the great coach, famously said, don't die with the music in you. You know, in his book, wrote that great book, Don't Die with the Music in You. You don't want to live in homeostasis where people are denied the amazing gifts you have. So I hope this has been useful. If you're in business or organizations, get in touch with me. I'd love to come and speak at your business or work with you personally on your goals and what you need. Do this for me. If you've liked this podcast, grab the link, flip it to a few friends, post it on your social feeds, or go into iTunes. Look for me there, Jonathan Doyle, and I'd love it if you posted a quote. But please share this. That's what really helps, is the last few weeks even, it's amazing. Emails, just people hearing this stuff and getting in touch with me. So I'm loving doing it. I hope it's useful. Please share it with people, and I'll have something great for you again next week.